Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Today is a special show because I have in the studio and on the phone members of the Chicago group, the Dontels, and we will be doing an interview and talking about the history of the group and playing their records for most of the show, so you should definitely keep tuned for the show. So first of all, I want to make sure that everyone can hear me. Art, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. You're on the air now. And so first of all, can we have the people in the studio introduce themselves and the person on the phone introduce themselves? Art, you can introduce yourself first.
Yes, my name's Art Mitchum, and I'm one of the originators of the group that eventually came to be known as the Dontels.
Okay, and you're actually on one of their records, is that right?
Yes, I am.
And who's in the studio now?
I'm Nate Pendleton.
Okay. And so first of all, what part of the city were the Dontels from?
The Dontels were from the west side.
Okay. What blocks on the west side?
We were on Central Park Avenue, 700 block, right in the area of the Sears complex.
That's 700 South?
Yes.
Okay. And you guys, first of all, Art, you were an original member of the group, and then Nate, who's in here now, joined right after the first record was cut. So I guess, Art, can we first talk to you about how you got started singing and how the Dontels formed?
Yes. Well, the group formed out of a few guys who were attending Wells Evening School. That was myself and Fred Alexander and a couple of other guys, and those groups didn't do so well. They kind of moved in and out, and this is like 58, 59. And
so you were already out of high school at the time?
Oh, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. I was out of high school in 57 and had been out a while and went back to school in 58 to finish my high school education, and I met some guys there that liked to sing. We started singing, and we were in and out. There were, you know, some guys who came along, and they participated a while, and then they left. And then 58 became 59, and we brought in my brother, and a friend of his. My brother's name was Harvey Mitchum. His friend was James Dyson. And he brought in a girl who was a friend of theirs, was Gwendolyn Bradshaw. And that group hung together for a while. We call ourselves the Condors.
Okay.
We call ourselves the Condors, yes. Go ahead.
So did you ever cut a record as the Condors?
No, we didn't.
Okay, because I think there was a Chicago, it's really rare, like a Chicago, like a kind of test press by a group called the Condors, called Let Me Down Easy and Meet Me Halfway. That wasn't your group, was it?
No, that wasn't.
Okay, and so that was like 59, you guys were the Condors?
Right.
And then did you ever sing before then, too? Did you sing in high school, too, or was that the first time you were singing when you were at that night school?
Well, I never sang with a group in high school. I'd been singing off and on with little hallway groups, street groups, but no, nothing in a formal setting. Yeah.
And then how did you become the Dontels?
Well, we went to interview with one of the record companies was on it, Michigan Avenue at the time. I can't remember whether it was VJ or Chess. And we had been informed that the Condors, we knew it was a bird, but it came out that they were a vulture. So we were kind of a little at miss by whether we want to take that name. And in the interview, the guy asked what was the name, and one of the members of our group said, "Don't tell." And the guy that was interviewing said, "Did you say the Dontels?" And we said, "Yes." We said the Dontels, but we meant don't tell that we're the Condors.
Okay, so pretty much your group name got made up by accident on the spot.
By accident, yes.
So the first record you released ended up being actually for a New York label, the Beltone label.
Beltone, yeah. Russ Vesti Yes, cut that for us.
So how did you end up, like I was I think one of the bigger groups on Beltone was the Jive 5 out of New York. How did you end up being on this New York label, and when did you end up recording it?
We recorded that, God, I can't tell you the exact date. I wish I had it in mind.
I think the record
got... I think it's 1959.
I think the record got released around 62, something like that.
Okay, maybe it's 62. I can't remember the dates that well. But after these interviews with a couple attempts at VJ, a couple attempts at Chess, someone dropped the name of someone who liked to produce records, and I met him in the western suburbs at, I think it was in Maywood or Brookfield, one of those. We met this guy.
Okay.
Russ Vesti, and he was associated with Beltone.
Okay, so he produced your record.
He produced our first record, yes.
And the record was Make a Change and Lover's Reunion. Was
Make a Change and Lover's Reunion.
What was the intended A-side of the record?
Make a Change.
Okay, well, I'm going to play the record, and then after playing the record, we could talk some more, and then Nate could talk about how he joined the group. So, but before I play the record, can you tell me exactly what the lineup was on Make a Change?
Make a Change was myself, Art Mitchum, my brother, Harvey Mitchum, Gwendolyn Bradshaw, Samuel Dandridge, and... James Dyson.
Okay, yeah, I think I saw the Dyson, James Dyson's name on some of the records. And Samuel Dandridge is actually, it's Leroy Dandridge, right?
Leroy, Sam Leroy, his middle name's Leroy. He went by that, but we called him Sam all the time, so I remember Sam more. But yes, that's correct.
Okay, so his real name, because I know he was singing Sam, so his real name is Sam, and his middle name is Leroy, is what you're saying.
Right.
Okay, well, I'm going to play the record, and we could talk some more. So this is the Dontells with their very first record, I think from 1962, called Make a Change. Okay, that was just the Dontells with their very first record, Make a Change, from, I think, 1962. And if you are just tuning in, I have members of the Dontells in the studio and on the phone. We were just talking to original member Art Mitchum, who is on the phone right now, and he was talking about how the Dontells formed and how they got a recording contract with the New York record label that released that record. So, Art, we just played the record. Did it get any play? Do you know?
Yeah, it was played locally, Chicago and Chicago suburbs. I don't know of it having any national play.
Okay, and but they were playing the Make a Change side. Is that right?
That was supposedly the premier side, yes.
Yeah, what's interesting is over time, I don't know if you know this, but your record became very collectible with doo-wop collectors, and they're actually looking, buying it for the Lover's Reunion side.
Okay.
But it's actually a very valuable doo-wop record now, because both sides are really nice records. So
I'm surprised. I'm not really surprised, because sometimes A-sides don't really go.
But I'm just saying it's like a different, like, on the radio at the time, obviously that was the sound, the Make a Change side. But, like, the doo-wop collectors, like record collectors, people like me, started buying it for the other side. So I'm just saying it's interesting, you know, what people listen for in a record over time changes.
I see.
So eventually the lineup changed, and Nate had joined the group. So how long, first of all, when you recorded that record, did you guys do any local shows too, or what was going on? Were you just recording, or what was happening at the time?
At that time, we did Herb Kent and a number of DJs were running what they call the hops.
Okay.
They were, they had these hops at local churches, Crystal Ballroom. They'd run these things Fridays and Saturdays nights, and all of the high school students would come, and they would have a name group there, and then they would feature two or three newer groups.
Okay.
And we did some of that. We appeared at the Crystal Ballroom with Walter Jackson. If you know Walter Jackson,
yeah.
He was the guy that walked with the crutches. We did some things with Billy Butler,
okay,
Jerry Butler's little brother, and the Enchanters. They were trying to come along too. St. Bernard's and De La Salle. A lot of Herb Kent's weekend events. Okay. High school students, yeah.
And that was all around 1962-63?
1962-63, yes.
And then, what's the story? Nate, who's in the studio now, became your replacement, is that right?
Yes, I had been I had been trying to establish groups starting in 58, 59, people in and out. The group got fairly solidified in 60-62, and then, after spending some time, and I was adult, I had a wife and children, I decided to go back to school.
Okay.
And I decided to move on with something else, because music was more of a lot of the other members. It was more of their, how can I say it? They had more affinity for it. They had more talent for it.
Okay.
And I had talent for other things, so I thought that I should move on and branch it off into the area where my talents were the strongest.
Okay.
And so I went to school and became an engineer.
Well, obviously, that's a good career choice. No one could argue with that.
It worked out well for me, put it that way.
So, Nate, how did you become a member of the group?
Art came by my house one day, and he had Sam, which is Leroy Dandridge, and David. David played the bass. And I didn't replace Harvey. I didn't replace Art. I replaced Harvey because Art is on some of the records that I was singing with, so I could not have replaced it. We're going back some time now.
So Art is actually on more than just...
Art is on People Gonna Talk, all of these Witch.
Okay.
You remember, Mitch, we did we call them the Cold Company Boys.
Yes, he's right, because Harvey was my brother. He's right.
Yeah, and I didn't replace you. I replaced Harvey.
Yes.
Because you're on People Gonna Talk, I Found a Love, Lonely Boy, The Old Man. Now, after that, you weren't on In Your Heart. from there on?
No,
none of the Dontell recordings from there
that
on.
That would have to be
which
after
went on
63.
To school from there. Then.
So let's talk about how did you know Nate, first of all? Like, you brought him into the group, pretty much?
Well, I brought Nate into the group because Nate, I moved to the west side from the south side of Chicago in 1952.
Okay.
So we met at grammar school, and we did a year there, and from then on we were
2 years
through high school. Yeah, a couple of years in grammar school, and then high school, and we just remained friends from the day we met.
So you had grown up with Nate and were in the same neighborhood.
Right, and I knew that he could sing. Because he had been singing in and out. Sometimes we'd sing together, not in a group, but we did a lot of little doo-wopping together. And we needed a singer after my brother was dropped out, and I recommended him. You know, so.
Do you know why your brother dropped out of the group?
Same
reasons, pretty much.
He had some really serious personal problems.
Okay,
put it that way. I won't go into it other than that.
So Nate, had you sung in any groups before?
Yeah, I was in quite a few groups. We always did a lot of singing. I was in the Gardenias, the Del Reys, and we did a lot of local singing.
But nothing, you never recorded until you got to the Dontells, right?
Yeah, we recorded, the Del Reys recorded, but we never before Zale Recording, I just remembered the name of it. We cut four tunes for Zale Recording, and they buried it. We never heard anymore.
They never released anymore
from it. Now, I was told certain things that it came out, some of the tunes that we had cut came out under a separate cover.
Okay.
You know, somebody else do it, but I can't confirm it. I don't know anything about it. I never heard from the music anymore.
Okay.
I don't even remember what it was. It's been so long ago. You know, we're talking 40-some years ago.
So Art approached you to join the Dontells?
Oh, yeah. He brought them by.
Was that like in 1963, around that time?
I can't remember exactly when it was. But
more like 64. Probably about 64.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly when it was because he brought them. Came by the house, and Sam and Dave and sit down and did a little singing, harmonizing, and I got with them. I enjoyed it. I always have enjoyed singing, and these guys were just super. They were a very good experience for me because of the fact I've always been singing in various groups, but this was really very nice. It turned out real nice for me.
So yes, and you know, about that time we had put together a pretty decent group. Because as a group, singing a cappella is one thing. But we had come across a couple of nice guys. We had developed our own bass and our own lead, which meant that when we went to play at different settings where there were other musicians, we would have our musicians could carry and direct the other musicians in the area we wanted to go. Because we were embarrassed one time by a band that really destroyed our music while we were on stage, and we looked really, really bad. And at that point, we solicited some guitar players of our own, which turned out to be David Green and Willie Wings, and he can tell you about that because they were still there with him when I left.
Okay, and who sang, one thing I didn't ask also is who sang the different parts on the record?
Okay, I did mostly baritone or second tenor, and I might did some leads on some tunes, but not on any records, I think, mostly in performance. When I was doing the singing, Gwendolyn Bradshaw did some leads, Leroy Dandridge did lead, and we had, like, this guy Dyson, and then when later on, like Nate's speaking of, by the time we got there, it was Sam, myself, and Gwendolyn. Gwendolyn and Sam were doing most of the lead. I was doing some lead. And then Nate came along, and he brought in Manuel, which was a great lead. And he can tell you more about that from then on.
Okay, so I wanted to talk about the next records that you ended up cutting, which Nate mentioned already. You ended up recording for a record label, which record label? It was Witch and Cortland. It was the same record label. The records you recorded were on the Witch label, and the first one you cut on the label was People Gonna Talk.
Ah, Yes.
Do you remember, first of all, what's the story, how you got hooked up with that record label? Nate, do you remember?
I think it was a branch off from this guy, Russ Vestee. He had a, with that Beltone label.
Okay.
He had a kind of a habit of having sub-labels.
Okay. Well, I think the people that own that label, I think it was Bill Ehrman was one of the guys, and Bob Catron was another one of the guys. Do you remember either of those names?
No, it's been a while. I can't remember those names.
Okay. But was it through the same producer who hooked you up with the label either way? Was it through that Russ person?
I think it was through Russ.
Okay. And so did you ended up recording the records at... Do you remember where you recorded the records?
Jesus, probably on Michigan Avenue, somewhere downtown.
Okay, and Nate actually wrote some of the songs. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay, yes, he probably did.
so what's
he
this?
Was a writer. He and Sam did most of the writing.
Yeah, I think there's the Dandridge name on a lot of the writing, too.
Dandridge is on quite a few.
So, Nate, how'd you get into songwriting? Were you just always writing songs?
Well, I always loved music and played guitar. And naturally, you play guitar, you have to come up with some songs.
Okay.
And I shared with you before the program went on how some of those tunes came to pass. And, you know, you sit down, you got time, you strum your guitar, play your guitar, and you just get off into it. A lot of these have a lot of meaning to it, insofar as I was going to turn. People Gonna Talk still holds true today if you listen to some of the lyrics. You know, some of the lyrics is, I don't care what people say, people gonna talk about you any old way.
Yeah.
And then it goes off into, I don't care.
And there was that Lee Dorsey song at the time. Do you remember that song, The People Gonna Talk? He did another song that's similar.
I've seen it, but I can't remember that
okay.
one. But, you know, that part of it holds true today. You
okay.
know, people gonna talk, I don't care what people say.
Okay.
People gonna talk any old way.
Okay.
It goes off to, I don't care, who knows all about it. It's a good tune. It was a very good tune. I enjoyed it.
So I'm gonna play that record, and then we could talk some more.
Great.
So this is the Dontells with their second record, with People Gonna Talk. Okay, that was just the Dontells with their second record called People Gonna Talk. And if you're just tuning in, we have on the phone and in the studio members of the Dontells. So that got released on the Witch label, and that record got some play in Chicago, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
Yes, it did. You got plenty of play in Chicago.
That was one of your biggest hits, right? People Gonna Talk?
Sure, yes it was.
And Nate was telling me some story about the Cortland like offices. Like
coal company. Okay. Remember, Mitch?
Pardon me?
That was the coal company. Remember we used to call them the coal company boys?
Oh yes. Yes.
The offices was up over a coal company,
yeah.
Actual coal company.
Do you remember where it was located?
No, I don't remember. I can't remember.
It's kind of that north side area. Coal. Yeah, over there.
I think it was Cortland Coal Company.
Around Cortland Avenue up there in that industrial area.
Okay.
Right, somewhere. I don't.
That's interesting. So then that record was a pretty big hit in the city, People Gonna Talk. And did you start getting more work from that record?
Yeah, well, Manuel came from the post office with me. I worked at the post office. And Sam originally was supposed to have sung lead on that song, Sam, which is Leroy Dandridge.
Okay.
And I heard Manuel singing it, and I brought him home, and I sit down with my guitar and showed him how he sung it so well that I introduced him to the guys.
Okay.
And right away they say, this is the one, and Sam heard it. He knew right away that Manuel had a better lead for that particular tune. So he sung it. We cut that right away, and we had a lot of fun doing all of this. This was a whole lot of fun.
So Manuel sings lead. Who else sings on the record?
Mitch, Gwen. Gwen singing top. I'm singing second. Mitch, you singing tone.
I'm down baritone, yeah.
Yeah, singing tone, and Sam is singing under him. Manuel has the lead.
So there's five members in
on that one, yeah,
okay.
That particular group.
So the Witch records, were they all recorded in the same session? You released two records. The other one was called Lonely Boy.
Yeah.
Yes, they were recorded simultaneously.
Okay. And Lonely Boy is a good song, but I know they didn't promote it or do anything with it.
No, that was a B-side, wasn't it, Mitch?
Yes, Lonely Boy was the B-side.
Well, the Old Man is the other side of
Lonely
Boy.
Do the Old Man. That was a dance tune. Back then, everybody was singing some type of something that you danced to.
Was it like an Uncle Willie dance? Because I know
that's okay. If you hear that's part of the lyrics.
Okay, because I know Uncle Willie was about an
everybody's
old man
dancing. Everybody's talking about the Uncle Willie. That's okay. In the tune. You remember that, Mitch?
Oh yes.
I had Henry Ford on recently, and he talked about the Uncle Willie because that was his big record.
Right.
So you cut two records, all in the same session on Witch Records. And you were just talking about how there's five members in the group. And did you have a band at the time? Like, did Willie Weems join the group yet?
Willie was there when I was there. Tell him about
sure,
Willie.
Sure, yes. By that time, we had Willie Weems, and David was beginning to come in as bass.
As a bass player, you mean?
Yeah, as a bass player.
Okay. And so did they play actually on the record?
Yes, they did.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you guys, were you doing more, like, did you tour more or do more shows after that record came out?
Well, during that time, we were doing, like Mitch had said earlier, we did a bunch of record hops.
Okay, so you're still doing record
yeah,
hops.
Yeah, we're still doing promoting, trying to promote.
Peppermint Lounge.
Lounges of promoting, record hops. You know, you had to do that St. Bernard, St., all the saints, you know, we did that.
And then you cut those two records on Witch, and then you ended up on VJ Records soon after.
Now, when VJ came along, I was gone.
Yeah, that's
so
good.
Nate will. I was not in the picture when they finally got to VJ.
Okay.
For the second time, because early in my career, I told you, I thought I mentioned this earlier. I'm pretty sure I did. That name of the Dontells came with an interview of either VJ or Chess or both, because we had interviews with them at the time, but they weren't interested, you know.
So
when they were there on Michigan Avenue in the 1300 block and 1400, 1500 block, a lot of record companies were located in that area at the time.
Yeah, that was Record Row, right?
Yes.
So you had left the group before they tried to get onto VJ Records?
Yes.
So, Nate, could you talk about how that happened?
Okay. With VJ, we had dubs.
By dub, you mean you went to the studio and cut a
right,
demo?
Right, we had cut our own demos, which is demos.
And it was actually pressed as a record?
Yes, pressed. No, okay. It was just one big press. Big press record.
It's called it like an acetate.
Acetate, yeah. Exactly what it was. Okay, we went to, we first took it, I think it was three of us, Sam, David, and myself. I think we went to USA. I think that was right across the street in front of VJ.
Okay.
We left a dub there. They were making a decision about whether or not they were going to record us or not. So we say, well, what the heck, let's go across the street to VJ. We went across the street to VJ, and we had another dub. And we put it on the air, and we asked for an interview. Chuck Barksdale of the Dales came out. He played the tune. He listened to the tune. He went back, and he's got Calvin Carter.
Okay.
Calvin Carter heard it. He signed us that night. We were in the studio in 2 days with In Your Heart. And it was released, the next release date, which was that week.
So that was pretty fast.
That was fast. He liked every tune that we had on that dub. And all that is what we have here, which is In Your Heart. Nothing But Nothing. Nothing But Nothing was something that we had cut ourselves. And they just put that on as a B-side.
So you're saying you didn't even re-record it, the version that was
no,
on the demo?
No, that is the original version. Nothing But Nothing is what you're hearing is us.
Okay.
See, we were more or less self-contained. A lot of this was our company, which was David Green on bass, Willie and I played a lot on a lot of these sessions, especially the ones that I wrote.
Okay.
I played guitar.
Okay.
On a lot of these sessions. And then where were we? We were with In Your Heart. That was good. That was
your hit on
that
VJ.
That was the baby.
That's the first time I've ever heard of people cutting a demo and actually getting signed from it.
Signed from it right there. Chuck Barksdale, he got up. They were in the back playing checkers, and we were laughing. Got up. He went to the back. He got Calvin Carter. He said, these guys got some tunes.
So you're saying you had pretty much all the records you released on VJ were songs you had already done.
Already did.
But you actually re-recorded them for VJ.
Actually re-recorded
except,
them for VJ.
Except for Nothing But Nothing.
Nothing But Nothing, let me see. Nothing But Nothing is what we had done ourselves. Okay, everything else.
You re-recorded.
With VJ, we were in the studio.
So,
VJ studio.
Whatever happened, so you said you had an acetate with these demo versions of the song. No one has the demo versions anymore.
No, I wish I had it. There's a whole lot of history in that.
I have some demo versions left. Some of them have the vinyl coming off the metal. I'd have to look at them. I have a few of them around here from the acetate that is thrown on the metal. And what we had done, even though this was prior to Nate coming on, we had found that trying to get record companies to take you on the competition was so stiff. We had been recording, putting up our own money to reserve studio time to make recordings. We had been doing that prior to this time that Nate's talking about. That's how we made a lot of our own records.
Okay.
We did it with us. When we
Sure, we did it when we... But we had done it even the couple sessions before, and some of the older songs I've got some acetates down there from where we went into the studio and made some recordings.
So you're saying you have more unreleased material that you cut as demos?
I think so. I have to look. I remember last time I was looking in there, I'd seen some acetates that were coming off and the metal was underneath. And
yeah, you should get them transferred.
The Old Man and some of the others. There's quite a few of them around.
You should get them transferred while you still can, like before the acetate falls off the metal entirely.
I'll take a look at it. I had just kind of had given up on this. But I'll look around here and see what I have and I'll talk to Nate. I'll probably pass it along through Nate because he's still really interested in keeping this thing going.
Yes, so what was the lineup of the group who went to VJ Records and who discovered?
That was Leroy Dandridge, Manuel Seal, myself, Nate Pendleton, Willie Weems on guitar.
Okay.
And David Green on the bass.
So
that okay, was only three singers.
And you see what's happening from him. The remainder of the group, that was the nucleus of my group, it became the nucleus of his group, David Green, Willie Weems, and Sam, Leroy Dandridge.
Right.
They were with me. He brought Manuel in, and he came in. And, well, he was there with me for a short while, too, but it was a transition. So those guys kind of transitioned both of those periods.
Do you know why Gwendolyn left?
Gwendolyn, I really don't know. I think Gwendolyn's personal status changed.
Okay.
She got married and different things, and I think Gwendolyn just slowly decided to go her own way.
Okay. Well, I'm going to play the Dantels with their hit In Your Heart, You Know I'm Right, on VJ, which was, I guess, the biggest record that they released.
Yeah.
And we can talk some more. So this is the Dantels with In Your Heart. Okay, that was just the Dantels with their biggest record called In Your Heart, You Know I'm Right. And if you're just tuning in, Art is off the phone, but I have Nate, who sings on that record, talking about the song. And he wrote the song. So what's the story? You were telling me some story about writing that record.
In Your Heart. I've written quite a few of those. Let me see the story on.
But you're talking
In Your Heart. Yeah, In Your Heart. I used to work at Hawthorne Post Office at 23rd and Pulaski, and I lived on 18th and Central Park. There was a big sign. It was back during the election when Barry Goldwater was running for president, right at the corner of Ogden and Pulaski. It was a big sign that says, In Your Heart, You Know I'm Right. I say, good. I'm going In Your Heart with my guitar. I went home and I wrote it. I went home and wrote the tune. It came out pretty good. I'm kind of proud of that one. That was a lot of fun doing that one.
And pretty much all the songs were written even before you got to VJ, because they were all on your demo.
Oh yeah. Oh no. We had they nothing. All they did was put the charts. They did the orchestration behind it. But all that was just like it came out. Some of it that was written one way, it came out another way.
Okay. So actually, one thing I wanted to ask you about was your sound was a little bit different on those records. Like, you had an Impressions type of sound on the VJ record. So what's the story with that?
Okay, the reason to sum up now, our records intentionally, now we love the Impressions. The Impression was what was happening at that particular time. I think everybody, they were popular, they were very professional, and plus they had Curtis. Okay?
Okay.
Now, everybody wanted that particular sound because that is what was happening. But you cannot. Our tunes was written one way. Then Johnny Pate did the charts for the Impressions.
Okay.
With VJ Records, they in turn let Johnny Pate do our charts, which is going to sound like the Impressions because he's doing the Impressions charts.
Okay.
You know? So consequently, we wind up putting some mm-hmm into it, which was the Impressions their entity.
Okay.
You know, they put a certain tune and say, mm-hmm. So a lot of our tunes, we got the mm-hmm in it too. So this is why a lot of our tunes come up sounding like the Impressions. But if you had heard the original charts, the way we did it, didn't sound like
the
that.
Demo version.
The demo, the way we did it, we went in the studio, we put monies up and produced our own music, okay? And we took it to BJ, and they orchestrated it and did the charts on it. So a lot of the tunes came up sounding like the Impressions, which you hear some of. But that wasn't bad. That wasn't bad. We didn't mind.
I mean, that's not a bad thing. That sounds like
the
Impressions.
It's not a bad thing.
So then,
it's not a bad thing.
So do you know if that got some national play that deep down in your heart?
I know it went regional. I don't know how far it went. Because I have regional charts. I've got charts that
show the record on it.
Yeah, regional.
And
then they had some of it. I saw it was exposed. It got some, was it Billboard or Record? Billboard, Record World, and Cashbox.
Yeah.
I think it got regional mention in some of those. I don't know exactly which one it was, but I know it got a little something. I got some charts on it.
And that got released around 1966, something like that?
I can't remember the dates, but it sounds seemingly that's what it sounds like.
And then the second record that VJ released on you, I'm Gonna Tell the World and Ain't You My Baby.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was a great record, but I don't think they promoted it.
No, we didn't. They went under before we could really get those out.
Okay.
In fact, all of this was part of the same session. Now, In Your Heart, we did that by ourselves. And then the real big session started coming in with Tell the World.
Okay.
Okay, Tell the World, Ain't You My Baby, Move On Down the Line. Was big sessions by VJ.
So yeah, and Move On Down the Line and There Goes a Fool. They were unreleased records.
Unreleased. Okay.
It came out on a Japanese CD in the 80s sometime.
Absolutely. Well, no, it was released on a VJ demo.
Okay.
The blue and white.
Well, that one wasn't the Gonna Tell the World and Ain't You My Baby were, but the Move On Down the Line and There Goes a Fool weren't released at all.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So. So, how long you were on VJ for a couple of years, pretty much?
Yeah, was it? Yeah, pretty close to a couple of years. We did.
Okay, and then one thing that you guys ended up doing is you guys ended up having your own record label,
right?
And you had a couple labels: the Dante label and the Ambassador label.
The Ambassador, the Dante, and the Dandy.
Yeah, and the Dandy
and
label.
And the Dandy.
So, why did you end up starting your own record label?
Because we was getting too much flack out of the rest of them. So we say, we'll try our own luck. And, well, you know, back then, what was happening in the music business. So we did pretty good. It was a lot of fun. We, you know, a lot of exposure. We did our best to market it. We sold a lot out of the trunk of the car and stuff. But it was enjoyable. It was a lot of fun.
So I'm going to play, well, hopefully I have time to play a bunch more because you have a lot of good material.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to play one of the records, and this is the last Dontels record that you released as the Dontels on the Ambassador label.
Mm-hmm.
And this was called I Can't Wait. And
it's
actually
a beautiful cut.
It's a nice cut, and it was a cover of the Baby Washington record.
Right, absolutely.
And this came out, I think, 1971, around that time.
Right.
And let me play it, and we can talk some more. So this is the Dontels with their very last record called I Can't Wait. Okay, that was just the Dontelles with their last record that they released in 1971. And that was called I Can't Wait, and it was a cover of the Baby Washington song. And I was just talking off the mic to Nate about how, first of all, it had a much different sound than the VJ with the strings. Who did the strings on that?
Riley Hampton did the charts.
And you actually hired him because it was your own label,
right,
to do it.
Right, right. Riley Hampton did the charts on that, so you could see that it didn't have that flavor. He did it the way we wanted it done.
Okay.
He went with VJ. Calvin Carter told him how to do it. He's A&R man.
Okay.
He told him what he wanted, but when you run your own ship, you can tell them how to do it your own way. You can get your own feel for it. You wrote it, you know how you picture it, how you feel it, and you can have him do the charts the way you want it. So that didn't come out impressionist, one of them.
And the harmony was a little thicker. You were saying there was actually four members singing on it?
It was four on that one. We added a guy named Ralph. I can't remember Ralph's last name, because we're talking many years now.
Okay.
I can't remember.
How did you know Ralph? You just, one of the other guys knew him?
Ralph was Sam's cousin or something.
Okay.
We were relatives indirectly.
And you were saying that Ralph is actually on some of the VJ records too?
Yeah, he's on some of, on all the last VJ records. Let me see which one. So, Gonna Tell the World, Ain't You My Baby, Move On Down the Line, There Goes a Fool. Okay.
But he's not on Moaning and Crying.
No.
Okay. And so, so that was the last record that the group recorded. What was the group doing? Was the group focusing on other things?
Yeah, we were doing other artists. We had other artists that we were working with. We worked with quite a few artists, some other groups. I can't call all of his name now, but we worked with a lot of them, getting them ready for different, cut with us or not.
Did you produce shows or you just produced records?
No, we produced shows. We did our own shows. We carried our own shows.
So where did you produce shows? Like, at what venues?
We did... locally, regionally, more or less, Michigan.
Like, did you have
Indiana.
A review with the Dontelles?
We had a review, the Dontelle review.
So you had a review with the Dontelles and a band
and some other acts.
So around what years was that happening, in the 70s or in the 60s also?
It started late 60s. We always did do our own, have our own review.
Okay.
I can't remember the dates that would start, but we would naturally headline it.
And you don't remember some of the other acts on your review? I know that like some of the other stuff you release on your label, like Larry Houston.
Larry Houston was part of the review. The Turks.
Okay.
The Turks.
And I know Willie Weems wrote and produced.
Yeah,
the Turks.
Willie did. One thing about the Dontelles of my era. They were all very, very, very good songwriters. In fact, we had formed our own version of the Hollandosia Holland Sensational Songwriters out of Motown.
Okay.
We called it Dancy Penn.
Okay.
Leroy Dandridge, Manuel Seal, Nate Pendleton.
Okay.
Dancy Penn. Now, when Willie Weems was involved on some of the cuts, it was we Dancy Penn.
Okay.
So we wrote a lot of songs for not only for us, but we wrote a lot of songs for other artists.
Okay.
And Sam did a majority of the work. He spent a lot of time. He was just a wonderful man. He could really write. I was very proud to be part of all of them. It was some talent there between Sam and Manuel Seal.
Okay.
They were very, very, very talented. I had a lot of times I would forget my lines looking at them, listening to them sing.
And
they were good.
One thing I wanted to ask about was Leroy Dandridge, Sam had an alter identity as Singin' Sam.
Singin' Sam. We all had something going.
So he also sang with as Sam and Kitty.
Sam and
duo.
Kitty. Yeah, it was another. I can't think of Kitty's name. I don't even.
It was a Kitty. It says Kitty Grove on.
Kitty Groves, right?
Okay.
Kitty wasn't her name. I don't know if Kitty was her name.
Well, probably.
No, Kitty. Kitty Groves, right?
So one thing I wanted to ask was, Singin' Sam had some records dating back, I think, even to the 50s, if not the early 60s. So he was pretty much doing that the whole time while you were with the Dontells.
Right. He was doing something. We all had something doing. I had another career. I did comedy. Nate the Baby, comic MC. I did quite a bit of comedy. And Emmanuel was a reverend.
Okay.
He conducted a 42-man choir. So we all had something other than just the Dontells that we did collectively.
So he was a reverend while you were with the Dontells.
He was a reverend, yeah.
And so one thing I'm still trying to understand about Singin' Sam and when he did his stuff, was he on your review and did he do separate shows? As
we would
Sam?
All do, yeah. Sometimes he would, not all the time, according on what we had going. Well, not a lot. He didn't do Singin' Sam a lot. But he would, yeah, he would do Sam and Kitty would be part of our
part
review.
Of your review.
Yeah, but he didn't do Sam, a lot of Sam, Singin' Sam by himself. He would do some sometimes if time allowed, because we'd have other people on the show. And the show, 9 times out of 10, I would MC the show.
And one thing I wanted to ask was, Sam had, like, he released a bunch of records as Singin' Sam and the Sparks, or Sam and the Sparks. Was the Sparks a band, do you know? Because some of them are even instrumental. Like, did he have a whole separate band from you guys?
Well, yeah, well, you know, we would add what was needed, you know, because whenever we would do a show, we had the rhythm. We would add horns.
Well, I'm just asking, did he have a whole separate thing going on outside of the Dontells? Because he released a whole bunch of records.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of that came before I got into the Dontells.
So you said you did stand-up comedy. How did you get into that?
I just always like to make people laugh. I'm a happy person. I always wanted people around me to be happy.
Okay.
I don't think that'd make me bad. It's just a happy person, you know.
No, it makes you bad. So you were doing, like, the MC for your shows, like you were.
Not only my shows, I did a lot of other acts. A lot of stars, the stars today. I did brought quite a few of them across the stage. I had a lot of fun doing that.
Okay. And let me play one of the. So one of the artist that you released on your label was Larry Houston.
Larry, Blues Boy Houston.
And the Dontells sang backup on Larry Houston's records.
Some of them, and some of them we didn't.
Yeah, some of them there's girls. I think one of them there's girls singing backups, but when there's guys, it's probably the Dontells.
Well, some Dontells, we'd take some whosoever was available. Be Dontells the majority of the time, but sometime it would be some of the whoever was standing there and could blow. Let's go, you know?
Okay, well, let me play one of the records. This one is called It's No Secret.
It is no secret.
Every time my baby calls,
it's the worst you have to say. Honey, I love you.
Baby, I love you.
walk me up.
Okay, that was just Larry Houston with one of the records released on the Dontells Dante label, but it obviously did not have the Dontells singing because it had girls singing on the record. So, but there were a bunch of other really good Larry Houston records that you guys released that did have the Dontells singing on them.
Right.
Or members of the Dontells or whoever was around.
Right.
So, one thing we were talking about was you got into stand-up comedy and were doing emceeing, and you actually cut a record, which unfortunately I don't have, but it's Willie Weems. I think it got released as Willie Weems and the Outlaws. It's called Snuff Time.
Snuff Time.
And you do vocals on the record.
I'm doing vocals, right.
So what's the story? You just went into the studio and did like a rap?
Impromptu, a rap, more or less. Just, the music was funky, and we needed something to put a spark in it, even though the it was laid down and the tracks was laid really good. I mean, they were really grooving. And so I think Sam came up with the idea, come on in the studio and do snuff.
You know,
act like I had some snuff in my mouth. And it was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun. We couldn't hardly cut the tracks for laughing. And so it was a lot of fun. We got to get that snuff down. That's really nice.
So do you know what the other members did since the 70s? Like, I know Sam continued to do Sam and Kitty and entertainment. Is that right?
Sam continued to work. Manuel went off on his own. He cut a couple of tunes. I don't have them here. I can't remember what they were.
But they were released?
Yeah, they were released. I don't know what kind of noise it made out in the world.
Do you know if it was released as Manuel Seals, or was it another name he did?
Manuel Seal.
Okay.
Manuel Seal, yeah. I don't know. In fact, Manuel Seal has a son, Manuel Seal, that got a Grammy. He wrote something for one of the name stars, Alicia Keys or somebody. He did,
okay.
Manuel Seal, he got a Grammy out of Atlanta.
And Willie Weems was your guitar player. Did he go on to do other stuff too? Do you know?
Yeah, Willie did a lot of writing. Like I say, we all pretty good with the pen.
Okay.
And Willie did a lot. In fact, he did some of the better ones that we'd. That I can't wait. Tell the World.
Yeah, I see his name is on a lot
he did
of the
tell
records.
The World.
And you continue to do more like stand-up comedy stuff?
I did a lot of comedy. I enjoyed that. I didn't do too much singing anymore after we kind of went our ways. We started thinking in terms of producing other acts and recording other acts. That was our goal at the time. But time goes on. You're raising your family and sending kids to school and things like that. So your life take on another entity. Because it's rough. It's hard out there. It was hard.
Yeah, I mean, it was very difficult to get a record
on. It was very hard.
Like, it's actually surprising you got play on the record you released yourself. That I can't
believe. Because we knew how to get play.
Yeah, it was so difficult for an independent label to do that.
We know how to get play. We know how to get it.
So do you still do stand-up comedy?
I can't even whistle anymore, let alone sing. I think in terms of the comedy part of my life, but I don't do it. I still make a funny every now and then, but I don't.
Okay.
I don't do anything.
You just annoy your wife.
I don't do anything. I just have a lot of fun. Just try to keep waking up every morning.
Okay, well that's good. You're
well,
still
they
doing
say
that.
what's the key to longevity? Waking up. You wake up every morning, you stay alive.
Okay, well, thanks so much for coming down and telling the story of your group. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate being here.
And for the rest of the show, I'll just be playing some more Dontell's records because they cut a lot of really good records and more records associated with them. This next record I'm going to play is called Nothing But Nothing, and it was the B-side of their hit In Your Heart.